Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to go to rugby heaven? Let's go back to 1987 with Squidge, with Squidge. Let's go back to 87 with Squidge.
Hello and welcome to the Squidge the Rugby World Cup retrospective podcast. If anyone is looking for the Squidge the Australian local news from 1987 retrospective podcast, that will follow this one. That'll be on after this one. But in the meantime, I am here to talk about the rugby that happened in 1987. I'm joined as ever by my brother, Mr. Will Owen. How are you doing?
I am all right, you know, and it's really cool having brothers on this podcast, isn't it?
It's a great format. It's a great format. I'm glad we're leaning into even harder, as I'm absolutely delighted to welcome back from Draft Rugby. They're on for the 2011 series, and I'm beyond delighted to have our correspondents for games where a Tier 2 nation drops a goal whilst miles behind against Australia back. Harry and Nelson Dale. How are we doing? Yeah.
Good, boys. Like, awesome to be back. I loved the music for the lead into to this one as well. The music, I don't know who's been doing that for you guys, but that's some quality stuff. Almost yes, as good quality as this rugby. I don't know. This rugby was on point. No handling errors or anything.
Oh, never. Not a single one. It's Tom Rosenthal does the music, who is fantastic and worth looking up if anyone's.
Yeah. If you ever look at a sad Spotify playlist, which I do all the time, Tom Rosenthal is always on there. Like, the algorithm loves him on Spotify.
His discography is equal parts, yeah, like Spotify sad playlist songs. And then here's a really silly song about jam.
Yeah.
So all do you guys know him? What's the guy?
Yeah, he liked the videos. They liked the stuff I was making on YouTube. So he kind of reached out to me. So I've got to know him reasonably well now. I am the person he texts every time he's watching rugby. So whenever he's watching the Six Nations or anything, he'll just text me asking, like, is Finn Russell always like this?
I don't know him yet, but one day I'll make him my friend. It's my mission.
I assume that means he sent you a few texts saying, mate, when are you gonna drop my name in the pod? Like, come on, week after week, about footy.
It's just we're always so focused on the rugby content, the pure rugby that we love to stay entirely focused. Yeah. How have you two been? How have the last year, I guess, or however long it's been, treated you?
I think it's like everyone else. It's just the ups and downs of COVID. So we both got it now.
Yep.
Since we don't have it now.
We've had it. Yeah.
But we did get our best podcast done when we were in COVID because we just had so much time. But mate, going very well. Mm. Just this is the kind of like the green light period in Australia for weddings and big events because they've all been delayed for the past 3 years. So I had a wedding Friday night and Saturday night up and down the coast this week, and that's pretty normal practice at the moment. I think I've had 6 in the last 2 months.
Wow.
I think you've had a few as well. You had a few big events as well.
Yeah, I think I'm at about 6. I had three weeks in a row. So it's been a pretty social period of time, and there's some good footy happening over here as well. So can't complain.
Just want to clarify, there were other people's. You didn't get married 6 times.
No, we're not. We don't get divorced and married. And although, you know, if you do that well, you can make a bit of money, I think. You know, some generous people inviting them over again. But no, look, we are just acquaintances. I think, you know, have you seen the movie? It's actually a documentary, The Wedding Crashers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We're the tame version of that.
You are.
It was originally meant to be about us, but then they realized having to leave early because your wives had a headache just wasn't as good TV, so they made us single. So.
Yeah. Which one of you is Owen Wilson? Who's Vince Vaughn?
I'm Vince Vaughn.
I was about to say, yeah. Harry's very much the old.
Like, if I sit up, just you can. Not everyone can see this, but yeah, Harry's a little one.
The game we are here to talk about today is Australia's 47-12 win over the United States of the America. On that similar, we were saying this just before we start recording. How familiar were you both with this kind of era of Australia? Was it mostly kind of odd replays of the following World Cup or?
Yeah, look, I think it is the next World Cup's where it really sort of started to make a bit more of an impression. Mind you, I was born in 91, so it's not like we were watching this footy back then. But, I mean, a few of the names here, especially in the back line for the Wallabies, they stand out for us. And it was good to be able to watch some of, Campo as an example. Campese, big game. Good to see some of the good things he does and the bad things he does. But also you can see how much, hot air he blows up himself.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's great to see David Campese and not hear him, which is,
Yeah. Another thing that's interesting is we looked on previous Australian episodes of this podcast about like, oh, my God, this is so cool. We're watching Michael Leiner before he became good. And it turns out he became good the day before this game.
He was really good. I listened to your last pod.
He was so good.
I listened to your last Aussie pod and you guys were crapping on him. And I didn't watch that game, so I'm not calling you out, but he was pretty good in this.
Yeah, he was outstanding, yeah. And obviously we'll come on to the stuff he does, but like it was really strange to go like, oh, okay. Is it just as soon as he plays against crap opposition, like he has no pressure on him type thing?
It's the weird thing.
I was going to say my takeaway was that the back line was just electric in this game, right? And maybe that was just because we're playing a Tier 2 nation, but I've walked away going, I still don't know who most of our forward pack are, but our back line, they're surely the World 15 back line. They have to be. Every single one.
I had this thought whilst watching the game that I remember so few of the forwards from all of the teams.
Yeah.
And we've watched so many games in this World Cup now. We're safely in double figures. We're like halfway through the World Cup. And I forget most of the forward pack. Every nation.
I think the vibe I was getting watching this is in that era, if you were skilled, you play in the backs. If you were tall or kind of chunky, you played in the forwards. Like, you didn't actually have to be good at footy.
You also needed a moustache.
And a moustache. You needed a moustache. Yeah, there was definitely some moustaches running around. And a very nice mullet from my namesake, Nelson. Mm. He was very good at the fullback for USA. He impressed me a fair bit.
Mainly because you just loved hearing your own name.
His name was Ray Nelson, so that was pretty good.
Yeah, no, love Ray Nelson. He has the most extravagant hair on the pitch as well, which is, going some distance in that
also,
USA.
Also, my favourite thing is he just isn't American. He's just seemingly got no ties. He's from Glasgow. He's Scottish. And he just turned up one day and played for the USA. And there's no record of how he's qualified. He's not like, none of his parents are American. He just turned up and was like, hey, you're right, lads. I am from Kansas. And everyone was like, okay, sure.
Clocked right now that the USA had a prop called Butch Haworth, and I had no idea he played.
It's a good name, though.
It's a good name. Great name. It's not as good as, like, I think the best name we've seen in the World Cup so far is Neville Cloppers. There's nothing's top that.
Who does Neville Cloppers play for?
I think it's Zimbabwe, maybe?
Of course.
Yeah.
The mighty Zimbabwean rugby team.
Speaking of
eligibility, how about our halfback, Brian Smith? If you're wondering about how you can just play for whoever you want, after this World Cup, he then went over and played for Ireland for 9 caps in the following 3 years as a fly half. Just change. Play for whoever you want. No problem.
Not too dissimilar.
No idea.
That's where we're at now as well. I think Jack Dempsey's been talked about playing for Scotland against Australia. He eligible a few weeks before. So
it's a big stitch.
Yeah, I would love to see that. Yeah, so, I'm just all for players playing for as many nations as possible.
Especially Tier 2 nations like Scotland.
Yeah.
And Wales these days. Italy's little bitch is Wales.
That's the problem. Clearly Australia and Wales have had such a tough time with the rugby nations always just pitting against us, and we're the ones that have really suffered from these rules in the past.
Definitely.
But we're definitely not getting any players that are deciding after playing for another country they're going to come play for Australia either.
We could have Nadolo.
That'd be tasty.
He's going to be close.
Matt Hansen.
Yeah.
He can come back.
I mean, Matt Hansen's probably going to play again, though. So
I might not.
Yeah, I should done with him yet.
Look, I've been playing on and off for the last, year, Rugby Union Manager free. And in my version of that game, Matt Hansen is the World Cup winning fly half for the Wallabies. Which is, fascinating world to have fallen into. to kind of see this world where like Owen Farrell has four caps and yet Matt Hansen's a World Cup winning fly half for a different nation.
If we win the World Cup, we might need you to come and manage rugby over here. That sounds like a pretty good thing. Manage all of these for us.
I've just won Munster European Cup. It was a hell of an occasion.
yeah, we don't joke about these things. He's really good at it.
Should we look at the Australia team?
Yeah.
We just touched on it a bit.
Sure.
I didn't realise until after finishing, I saw Brian Smith at scrum half and I went, huh, look at this interesting little guy. And I didn't realise it's the coach Brian Smith. I didn't put that together.
Yeah. He coached at London Irish and a couple of
London
places,
Irish,
right?
Who was England tack coach and famously is basically Eddie Jones's like arch nemesis.
Of course.
Desperately hate each other. That they coached in Australia against each other and then they both went to Japan at the same time and coached in the league in Japan. And then when Brian Smith was at London Irish, Eddie Jones was at Saracens and they just really hate each other and it's great. They just have this like ongoing desperate like feud with each other, and Eddie Jones is so clearly won at this point, he's still full of resentment for Brian Smith.
Every day he sends him a really resentful text.
Yeah, like he brought him up during the Six Nations, like how, oh, you know, Brian Smith did this to me once and I still hate him for it.
That's very Eddie Jones.
Well, yeah, the man played international footy for what, 5 years, and then went over and played rugby league, and we knew him as the Australian Sevens, men's sevens coach for many years as well. And they always talk about him as the ex-rugby league player. It's like the guy played for the Wallabies and Ireland, and yet he's a rugby league player, and every single time his name gets brought up, I just don't understand.
Makes no sense.
In several positions, was you know, pretty good career as well. Like when he went over and played for Ireland, he played for Leicester Tigers, you know, won the premiership with them, one of the first few years of the premiership. Like had a good union career as well as being...
And you wouldn't think it from this game, would you?
he was hot and cold, mate. If David Cambese turns into the most prolific try scorer of all time watching this game, then Brian Smith's got to be at least half decent.
Yeah, very true, very true. But yeah, so Brian Smith is probably the notable change in that back line. So you've still got Linus, Slack, Campese. Andrew Leeds comes in at fullback, who I wasn't particularly familiar with, but I quite like the look of.
Matt goes on to play for Leicester Tigers.
Does he?
There's a strong, weird, like Leicester Tigers connection through, and I guess maybe it's Bob Dwyer was their coach at the time, and just brought over loads of Australians at once. But yes, like weirdly future Leicester Tigers connection throughout this whole Wallabies team.
Yeah.
We were touching on like he was another one, Leeds was another one that jumped across to lead. Like we've got
four out of the starting backline players for all the Wallabies here.
And three like
moved to the NRL a year later.
Yeah. Wow. And three all time guns. State, so we just count them as they're not so good footy players. That's where they are. We don't remember them because
we never wanted them.
More like Andrew Leeds Rhinos, am I right? Because rugby league. Then in the Australian pack, does anyone care? Do we bother looking at the Australian pack?
Well, I'm not really.
Cameron Lillycrap, mate. He's a fellow physiotherapist. He after he played his seven caps for the Wallabies, he then went on and ended up being the physio for them for many years. Was it for the Waratahs as well? Wallabies and Waratahs
before his time at the Wallabies there.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool. Just ended up having involved with them for, you know, a completely unique way as well.
And another one, touching on that kind of weird connection here, Jeff Miller for the Wallabies was actually born in the US.
It's the open side flanker.
Came across when he was 7 years old, came to Australia and was part of the World Cup winning squad in 1991 as well. So, yeah.
Wow. So he's more American than any of the actual USA players playing in this game, isn't he?
Probably. And the flip side, well, we've had a few of their players as well came across to Australia, spent some time in Australia. Who was it, Harry?
Vizard?
Yeah, I think it was, Vizard. He.
No, I'm definitely making that up. It was Tony Ridnell.
Tony Ridnell,
the lock.
Blindside flanker.
Slash blindside.
Came over to Australia, started playing rugby in Australia for a few years. I think he was 9 years old when he came, went back to the USA and went, nah, I'll play any other sport. And apparently was an absolute gun at baseball and athletics and all this stuff. And then just went, oh, maybe I'll start playing rugby again, and then ends up playing in a World Cup.
Yeah, wow.
There's one other player, guys, in the pack that I thought you would have been massive fans of, because I assume he delivered you your top ever finish in a Rugby World Cup, and that's David Cody. So he was the first ever Australian player in an international match to be sent off, and that was in that third-place playoff against Wales.
Ah, That's who it is. Got my eye on him now.
Yeah, and I haven't looked, but I assume it was the first minute and it was the only reason we lost.
I think so.
It's pretty much. I remember, again, watching the highlights of that game back when I was about 12. And it is. It's like in the first half, he basically does nothing. I suppose we'll get to this on the podcast. But as I remember, he basically does nothing and the referee just points at the side of the field and tells him to get off.
Considering the things that don't get red cards in this World Cup so far, it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, far out. There's some big moments of just like head highs and different things like that. And they're like, yeah, it's okay. Let it play.
I like that. What was the comment for the shoulder charge? It was like a try-saving tackle. Oh. There was a shoulder charge. Yes. And they were like cheering about how good the shoulder charge was. It was low, it was hard, and it was effective or something. Like,
yeah, no, it was low, hard, effective. And definitely illegal nowadays.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's a penalty try now. But then if you just shoulder charge someone as hard as you can, you actively That's rewarded. Up. No try.
I don't know if you guys saw as well Helu when he got hit really high and late.
That one was bad.
Absolutely brutal. And Harry pointed out they walked over and started washing his face like they were washing a car.
They had that, you know, those like those number eight kind of shaped squidgies, that yellow squidgies that everyone uses to wash a car. I don't know if it's the same in Wales. They dead set had that, drenched it in a bucket of water, and started just like rubbing it all over his face.
It was definitely a dirty tackle, but a different type of dirty. They got confused.
Yeah. They definitely watched the wrong player.
Yeah, they're not good.
That was so weird. Physio's come a long way, thankfully,
like,
I swear.
Yeah, like the game's come so far. Back in those days, you used to get the sponge out and wash the players. Now they send them through like a big whirring machine. Spit water on them, two things rotate.
Coordinated. It's so much better.
That's right.
Every time a player gets injured.
It's just like that. It's along the sideline. They just put him on that chair and just goes through all the different. Yeah.
It's really effective. It's really revolutionized injuries in that players get far more injured going through them.
No, they don't get scratched. But they changed the stuff. You can't get scratched anymore. It's all good.
And that's it, though. Like, if they're off the field and getting injured by that, they can't be on the field and getting hit by head highs, you know? Like, so they're fine. It's minimizing concussions by sending them for a drive through.
Definitely.
I was going to say, speaking of concussions, did you guys see there was a stomp in like the first or second minute? Who was it? Shiflett from America just like absolutely stomps on the face of Jeff Miller. It was brutal as well. Far out. And like they get up like there was nothing as well. I'm pretty sure they're just like, yeah, just trying to get the ball. It's fine. No problem at all.
Good stump, buddy.
And the referee kind of looks at it and goes, oh, was there a knock on? Okay. Not bothered at all about the stump. Not fussed in the absolute slightest.
I agree. He definitely wasn't too bothered about knock-ons at points of time as well. Like those line-outs, I don't know how that can function. Every line-out, there was a knock-on or two.
It's ridiculous, line-outs in 87. Like, we've covered this before, of course, but like it's just a complete lottery. There is no point in doing them at all.
I mean, so the USA had a really cunning tactic that I'm not sure everyone isn't doing. On Australian lineouts, all the players just put their hands in the air and waved them about. Impossible. Like, it gave them like an 80% steal rate.
It's a solid move. Really, really intelligent stuff.
I thought that was genuinely where they were most competitive in the entire game, mind you. I thought the lineouts were 50-50 calls every single time. You had no idea what it was going to get.
Yeah. I think the USA were better on Australian ball than their own.
Yeah. they revolutionized the defensive lineout, as you said. Like, it was stunning stuff.
I think you guys asked, maybe it was the last Aussie matchup about when the lifting lineout was brought in. Have you ever talked about that since? It was 1999. So I realized I was playing rugby then and thinking, like, that mustn't have been lifting just because we were young, but no one was lifting. It just seems such an odd thing at that point of time that we still weren't lifting in lineouts.
The game was professional and they still weren't doing lifting lineouts.
That's really strange to me. I assumed it was kind of like around probably 93-95.
I want to see the game where it first happened and the opposition were just like, what the hell was that? It was like a meter and a half higher than it. That's not fair.
Hold on, he's twice as high as he should be. How did he get there?
There's no
he was
way
6 foot able. 8 to begin with. Hold on, let's not be doing this. Let's not be doing it. Why are you throwing the ball into the clouds? How are we supposed to catch that? That's not fair.
I love that in this hypothetical, the person that's blowing up is a 9-year-old Welsh boy.
Yes, we're talking about young people playing.
Right. Yeah.
It's how you get the youth involved. You know, you just need to really confuse them by one big man throwing another big man in the air next to them.
Should we quickly look at the USA team that they put out? So I think the most important change is, well, firstly, the captain, Ed Burlingham, is unavailable. He's injured. So Fred Paoli takes the captaincy, the prop. And for some reason, they have one good player in the back line who's played well all tournament in Kevin Higgins. And they put him on the wing, so he just can't get the ball very much instead.
What position did he play in the other games?
13.
Oh, right. Okay. We actually thought good. Roy Helu was pretty good, though.
Yeah,
He was,
I don't know if it's just a case of we've only got two good backs and they're both 13s. How do you get on the field?
Yeah. No,
they did say they changed 8 or 9 players for this game because they thought that they had a chance to make it through to the quarterfinals or semifinals, whatever it was at that time, which I'm sure you guys know. But they rested players against Australia so that their team was fresh to play England to try and make it through to the finals.
They did throw out quite a daft team in the game against France that we covered beforehand, such as, you know, Sandy Lomb on the wing, who sadly didn't make a return.
No, but I like them changing their halfbacks to bring in all Dave combination, which I think is a test rugby first. Joe Clarkson, who's been pretty good, has a massive boot, is dropped to the bench, and is like 14, dropped the bench in favour of a guy called Dave Horton, who doesn't have a Wikipedia page. And when you try to look him up, all that comes up is born circa 1955.
What?
So I know he was born around 1955, making around 32, 33 at this time.
Seems pretty old.
It's about, this was only his second cap.
He didn't do anything.
Didn't notice him.
No. He boots the ball a lot.
Actually, early in the game, I saw him and I thought they said it was Tom Horton and he looked like a hooker. And I was like, oh, my God, what are the chances there's two Tom Hortons that are playing hooker?
Yeah, the guy that...
The Waratahs hooker. So
who can't throw a line.
So clearly I completely misjudged what position he was meant to be playing and he's actually wasn't the most...
And maybe slightly which team he was playing for and what he looked like and what he was doing and maybe all the rest of that as well.
A point in the second half where he throws a miss pass and it takes him about a minute to wind it up. It's great. That was one of my favourite bits of the game. He kind of like stops himself still his momentum, stops his track, bends his arms right back and thankfully...
Gets a planning sheet out.
Yeah, exactly. And he just kind of like fires it across. It's great. It was a terrific moment of rugby.
I think he did a couple of the, you know, turn around and pass left to right, but backwards. Like he was facing the other way as well because he couldn't do a decent pass both directions.
Yeah, I was standing being seen international 10 do opposite Michael Leiner.
Horrible.
I mean, yeah, Leiner's a good kind of place to start because he gets a penalty early on and you think, oh, okay, he's getting his kicks now. And then he does this really smart kick to send Ray Nelson to fall over into the touch, which was quite fun because Ray Nelson takes it miraculously and then kind of goes, oh, shit, and just falls over. But it was a smart kick by Leiner to force that to happen. But it was also funny.
Nelson's face turn in slow motion as he kind of like, because he bends his body over the touchline to claim it, and realizes all his weight is on that side and he just collapses and falls.
Because it's 1987, do they not know that they could just like throw it back and keep playing? Like it's obviously such commonplace now, but is it just like that's never happened before? So the first time someone threw in when they're about to fall out to play on, they're like, you can do that? Like, oh my God.
I don't think generally in 1987 people know that you can do things other than run into touch.
Like, oh, because lineups are such a lottery, I guess they just don't care.
Yeah, weird was it? That was my assessment as well. Like they just go, I'm in not a great position. I'm just gonna run out and see how this line out goes.
Liner puts that grubber through from his like 20 meters out. No, just to try and take the meters.
No, that wasn't the only one that they ran out though.
Yeah.
Had plenty of times.
Maybe the USA coach, who was actually a former Ireland player and pretty much a prick, George Hook, who of course lost his job in the Irish media for defending rape, was the USA coach this World Cup. I don't know if he went, I've got this really cunning line-out tactic. I want us to play as early as possible, right? Just fall over the touchline. I want us to use this. I want us to show what we've got. We can really rattle them, I reckon. We can really rattle this Australian pack of faceless nobodies.
Genius. And look, rattled they were because, and this is a bit of a touchy subject on this podcast, but the first try is scored quite early on into the game.
Oh, right. Can we before we go on to the penalty try?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few points, right? One, we haven't talked about the Australian mascot.
Yes, let's talk about the Australian mascot.
I want to talk about the Australian mascot that looks like a dead squirrel. Like, not even the taxidermized squirrel, just a dead squirrel they've got on the side of the pitch.
I thought the same thing. They go, and there's the Australian mascot. And I was looking at it going, that is so much worse. You cannot pick that's a kangaroo.
No.
I also look sad
to look at. It just doesn't look well. It looks like it's crying.
It looks like, you know, if you get like a toy now from, say, it's the 80s and you're like, it looks really shit. It's because it's old. But it was new at the time. Like, maybe they were all just really shit then and that they can actually last long, but they just stay crap because they're always crap.
Always stay exactly as they were.
What I love is the commentator talking about the mascot, saying, hopefully this mascot can help Australia in their time of need. He's like, you're not going to sub him on, are you?
Hey, well, you never know.
He should have gone all right. But the commentating was very, very strange. I think, like, some of the things that they said and how they acted around this match, like, at the halftime, they were talking about Campo, and they were saying, you know, he isn't stepping and doing things like he'd normally do. And they actually had the quote, it's the sign of a man who has lost his confidence. And then they went on to say he always takes the safe option by taking chips rather than stepping. He chips
a little kick in behind. They're uncontested little chips.
Makes no sense.
Assessment of Campese at halftime, so bizarre.
It's brutal, isn't it? The way that he sets up that try for, is it Slack who scores it in the end?
Yeah.
And to kind of like,
he sets up a couple.
He sets up Slack.
And like,
the Campese magic, yeah.
That Slack try is unbelievable, where like Campo like chips over, regathers it, steps around like six people, and then passes to Slack to just secure
the
try.
Last guy's coming across. Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliantly timed pass. And they're absolutely brutal about it, just saying, oh, Campo's on really shit form because he's passing those balls instead of trying to score himself.
When I saw that, my thought was, that's clearly a guy who has enormous confidence because he's not thinking about passing himself. Like, he doesn't care. He's just, you know, he's two off the all-time try record at this point. Like, and he's just like, I'll give this one. You know, I don't need to finish this one myself. I'll get loads more as we go. And, you know, he did.
He did it look like he thought he was going to score every single time he had the ball. Like, he was trying to do something obnoxiously arrogant every single time he had the ball. It was like an absurd offload or like a little chip from his own 22 just because he thought he was going to run the length. Like, the bloke was the cockiest player I can remember seeing, and they're saying, he's just got no confidence. He just kicks it away.
Imagine what level of dickheadish confidence he must have had a few years earlier. If this is him without confidence,
this is when the media were tearing him down, apparently. And that's just wild. He's so confident now. I thought maybe it was like, you know, I used to be good in the day. I can talk a big game, but he looks like he was just as arrogant back in the day.
But at least he had reason then. At least, you know,
He was unbelievable in this game, Campo. Like, as you say, like virtually every time he was touching the ball, he was making line breaks or doing good kicks, and you know that he had the lot. Like, he was unbelievable.
He kicked once like 53 meters or something from his 5 meters, 2 meters out, 5 meters out from his own
kickoff,
from his own line. It goes out on the opposition 40, like phenomenal.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that he does that just feel like a modern winger would do. You know that, like,
honestly, I think Mark Nwanginituwasi, the Waratahs winger that cops shit in Australia constantly at the moment because he's an attacking fiend. Like, every time he touches a ball, something happens. But then he'll just, like, he misses that tackle on Nelson where you're just like, what are you watching? Like, why did he run around the outside of you? You got your line completely wrong, fell on the floor. Or he throws an offload to someone that bounces into one of the USA players' hands. Like, he was so erratic at all points of this entire match.
He big time has that vibe of he's only going to do the things he wants to do.
Yeah, like, 100%. You're not coaching him.
No. He's not listening, even if you try. Like, all of the all of the boring jobs, as he'd think of it, he's not interested in doing. You know, he's not chasing kicks. He's not making tackles. He's not offering any kind of line speed. All he's doing is he's getting the ball, having a little run. You know, maybe he'll do a little chase to show how quick he is.
Also, can we talk about Campo's offload for the Brian Smith try? How completely, utterly nonchalant that was. Like, he easily could have just stretched over and scored himself, but he thought... He just didn't fancy scoring as many tries that week, you know, this week. And, you know, he took the ones that came his way. But, like, on that, it was unbelievable the way he just hangs up in the air and, like, forces Smith to run that line where he probably wasn't intending to. It was just a really, really good offload. And, Smith takes the try.
That was the point that you sit in and you go, this bloke doesn't ever pass. And then he throws that pass and that try in the corner. And you go, well, he does sometimes. Like, it's just not when you expect it. Like, when he should pass, he doesn't. When he doesn't need to pass, he will.
The Wallabies love the little rap on the winger. Like, I take this back to, I had the same tactic when I was coaching the under-8 Cs at one of the private girls' schools in Sydney. And it was like, when you have the winger, when the winger has a ball, if you just wrap the winger and throw the offload, there's no one to defend it. It's the undefendable move. And it was for the Australian side in this game as well. Like, I think they did it 3 or 4 times in the match. It was just like, how are you going to stop the guy? There can't possibly be another defender there.
On the kind of wide angle, we can see Smith is currently stumbling over one of the USA players trying to tackle Campese when he throws the pass. Like, he's nowhere near. But he just hangs it in the air so well that it forces Smith to get around and get in position to score the try, which is not a line or move he was going to run himself. Like, it's, it reminds me a lot of Finn Russell for a similar pass to Sam Johnson a few years ago.
Yes.
Against Ireland, which was in the try there. Like, it's just a really... I love that when the player with the ball is far smarter than the player running the support. It's like, no, you do this. I'm going to throw the ball in. You're going to do this and you will score.
Yeah, I love it.
How about you were talking about the tries before. I know that you were as keen to talk about the dominant Australian scrum as we were.
Look,
because obviously the first try of this game was that penalty try to Australia.
Yeah. So it's something that really upsets me because, look, I like rugby, right? And look, that's not offensive, is it? That's okay. We all in this room, we all like rugby, don't we?
We all like rugby, right?
Bloody woke culture saying you like rugby.
I also, there's something about rugby I really enjoy, which is tries. Tries are great, aren't they? We all like tries here, you know? And the bit about the try that I think is particularly good is the bit where they get that fucking spherical thing. Like, it's not even spherical, it's ovular. That's it. That's the word I'm after.
The ball?
The ball, that's the one, the ball. They get that, and they put it down in the in-goal area. That's my favourite bit.
I love that you struggled with ball but got in-goal area. It's a true rugby move.
It's not believable.
But this goddamn referee depriving us of that by giving a stupid penalty try, which the commentators don't even realise is a penalty try. He thinks they've penalised the USA being offside in midfield, just suspiciously under the sticks, where the mark on that penalty is.
I love that when they do the tries in this World Cup as well, you don't have to be 5 metres out. Like, it seems like every single one, every single scrum seems to be like 1 metre out from the USA line. It's just like, what's going to happen this time? Like, we take 2 steps and we're over the line.
It does make me wonder if anyone's claimed a try, like doing a put into a scrum, if the ball's ever touched the line there. And so, it just scored.
All over.
It was very close. But did you guys hear the commentators? When they had, I agree with the Americans, they were crushed rather than caved in, which I think translates now to they weren't cheating. They were literally just really shit and they know it. Like, that is the translation. They weren't cheating. They just weren't very good.
I remember Wayne Barnes using the phrase once that being destroyed isn't a penalty, or worse, that effect. But like, when an opposition scrum was completely on top, it's like, no, they're just going back with this. They haven't actually done anything illegal.
Yeah, exactly.
They're just weak. And again, it's a really novel approach to go to the referee and say, no, sir, I'm just shit. I'm just really bad at rugby. But it almost worked for them.
What I like that happens not long after this is they, I have in my notes, Omg, I think they're subbing on the guy who uploaded this video to YouTube.
Yes, so they do.
They bring on Gary Lambert, who this video is on his YouTube channel.
Gary Lambert? Yeah, he uploaded all of the games he played for the USA to YouTube, which is heroic.
So I went and I looked up Gary Lambert a little bit.
Yes.
And do you want some hot Gary Lambert facts?
Oh, I...
Absolutely.
So he's 6'2". His weight is 230. I don't know, 230 what? But his weight is 230. Time. He was born in Bronx, New York. He was 23 at the time of this being published. His occupation is a lumberjack. He is single. That they feel like they need to state.
Okay.
Played rugby for 10 years at this point. There's loads and loads of information here. But it gets way more interesting in a minute because they ask him the question, biggest disappointment in rugby? And his answer is London Irish. No, his answer is losing 6-3 to Canada in 1981. And his biggest influence on his career is teammates.
Teammates. Wow, that's deep.
None of them specifically.
Just teammates.
Teammates. Good to have them.
Comments/observations. That, but... It's just a matter of time before we get recognised as a rugby superpower. How long this will take is dependent on the effort we put into it. It's up to us. Which just clearly he just threw that out there and they just thought, I don't know what fucking question that's answering, but you know, we'll throw that in.
Yeah, isn't that every nation?
Yep.
Like if you just get better, like you could be a superpower. Yeah, we can.
And if his auntie had balls, it would be his uncle. But that's really
so. Okay. I've got some contrasting, different Gary Lambert facts.
Okay. Okay. Right. I've got some more, but you do yours.
So I don't have Gary Lambert as a lumberjack. I have him as a chiropractor and semi-professional poker player.
Yes, the commentator says that he's a poker champion, so, isn't he, I think?
Well, no, because he apparently first played professional poker after this.
Oh, no, it's not the commentator. Yes, no, you're right. It was Wikipedia. Sorry, his Wikipedia page says that he won professional poker championship.
So he retires from rugby. World Series. He retires from rugby union, goes to focus on poker for a few years, then goes back and plays rugby league for the USA. But there are no records of any of the games he played in, so no one knows how many games he played. For the USA rugby.
Are they on his YouTube?
Not good at that time.
Yeah, did you check his YouTube channel?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you'll find them.
He does, however, on his YouTube, he does have a video just called Unforgivable USA Rugby. And it's a 52-second video of just somebody he knows from the USA rugby team just chatting shit on a bus, doing impressions. And he thinks that's unforgivable. That has 6,000 views. The description is, Unforgivable became our inside joke in Ireland. Now make me a sandwich. With waffle fries, I have no idea what that means.
What?
So Gary Lambert actually won the World Series Poker Circuit tournament event in 2011 when the next World Cup was going on. So he got good. Like he was good at poker. It wasn't just
was
better at poker than rugby.
Has any of this been verified? Because it sounds like he's just a master of like weaving stories on the internet.
He wrote his own Wikipedia page.
So he's listed on. If you look, there's an article on the poker player profile website which lists him as Dr. Gary Lambert, the professional poker player, who has won two tournaments and finished third in Louisiana. Total winnings, $83,000.
Fair play. $83,000
in poker. And at one point, he was ranked 502nd best poker player in the world.
He won the World Series? Surely he's going to be higher than that.
Oh, he won a tournament on the... one of the events in the World Series.
Well, with all of that money that he wins, he can go and enjoy some of his leisure interests, such as hunting, fishing, or getting away into the mountains. They're what he likes to do in his spare time. His favourite books... Oh, no, sorry. His significant books, not his favourite, but his significant books is just The Godfather.
the DVD of The Godfather?
Just the book, The Godfather. Right, his favourite films are Apocalypse Now and Blazing Saddles.
But not The Godfather.
Not The Godfather.
He was a fan of Francis Ford Coppola's Double Work. Yeah, but the book's so much better.
Yeah. And his two goals. So he's got his goal in rugby, which is to play and beat teams that I've lost to at all levels. Like he wants to, you know, win the World Cup, then go back down to level one and beat, you know, the local high school under eights team he lost to when he was a kid. And his personal goal is to design and build his own home and have a successful personal and business life. Nothing to do with poker, but...
No.
Designing and building his own home, loves a bit of that.
Maybe that's what his winnings were going on in poker. He was playing poker entirely to finance his own home building.
shouldn't have you been investing back into the superpower that is US rugby? Wouldn't that have been a good place to put his money?
It depends if they start beating all the teams they've lost to.
So apparently he's been working as a chiropractor for a college rugby team for a few years, which he's just got a fascinating life that doesn't make sense. Yeah. None of it links up.
Like, no.
This is some sort of like Into the Gary Lambert verse.
As I said, Gary Lambert is the only player I've done any like research on because I just thought it was cool that he uploaded all of the games onto YouTube. And like reading all the comments on it is just people saying, like, wow, thank you, Gary. Thank you for uploading this game, Gary. And clearly people are delighted for him.
He sounds like a pretty special character. I mean, another name, like we mentioned before, Roy Hillu. As soon as I saw the name, I'm like, the guy's Tongan, right? He's going to be sure, Tongan. Yeah. And looked him up, and yes, he was born in Tonga and adopted home the USA. He played there, and obviously he's lived there for a long time. He had a son also named...
Hold on. But before that, we knew that if he ever had a son, he'd be a good chance to play another code of football in America that's pretty big, where you can throw the ball forwards. Because he threw on one of the breaks about a 3-meter forward pass that the referees just decided were legal. So it was very American of them. And he clearly has the genes.
It was one of the worst forward passes that you've seen on, you know, on the TV that haven't been called. But
that's the highlight. His son obviously watched time and time again because...
Yeah, well, his son ended up playing for the Washington Redskins and the Oakland Raiders. So
no way!
NFL was in the
fourth
blood.
Round pick or something like that.
Yeah, fourth round pick. So pretty good.
That's fantastic.
Roy Hillu Jr. Wow.
Roy Hillu Jr. I think half of them had, you know, family members that went on to do, you know,
Gary Hine was the other one.
Yep.
Wasn't his great-grandfather that was like a Hall of Famer? Yeah,
Gary Hine, his granddad, Mel Hine. So it's actually Gary Mel Hine. And Mel Hine, his granddad, was a pro footballer in the Hall of Fame for the Giants. And his dad, Mel Hine, also held the US an indoor pole vault record for a while. But... apparently, it wasn't just because he was the only one that pole vaults inside. Like, it's a legitimate thing that people do.
That's a lot of sporting pedigree in this USA team. Yeah. Shame about their rugby ability, but, you know.
No, absolutely no rugby pedigree.
They were playing the wrong sports.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Gary Hine also has a master's from Oxford University in jurisprudence.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm... going to Google what that is.
Well, thank goodness I'm the only one that didn't know. I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
The theory of philosophical law.
Wow.
Theory or philosophy of law. Sorry. Okay.
Okay.
It's so that makes a little more sense. Why
he
would
like
we have law?
Interesting guy.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, I mean, it's very shallow of me to say this, but I can just imagine that he turns up to his lectures there at the University of Oxford, which he does a 3-year course on, and they just go, well, just to stop crime, innit? It's just, that's why law's there.
That's the
perfect
answer. You just got 100%.
Yep.
The answer we've been looking for.
Crime, isn't it?
Everyone else has been writing these long essays and just been putting big crosses over. Like, no.
You're reading way too much into this, pal. Like,
there we are. It's to stop crime, isn't it? We nailed it. We finally got it. We finally solved jurisprudence.
I feel like it's a good career path for me to just do this as a, like, lecture this as a career. Probably at the University of Oxford as well. And just turn up, stop crime, you know?
Make sure you charge per semester, not per time of, like, your lectures, though, because it sounds like it's going to be a very short course.
I'm not going to charge per word.
It wouldn't be a good move.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
If we roll on, so I don't know if you guys, there was one try that the USA did, and there were some exciting moments, but it was thrown off an intercept pass from Smith, and just throwing the ball around, and I think it was Nelson, made a bit of a break, throws that offload to Hines, two names we've been talking about, and this was a penalty, wasn't it? They end up getting pulled short and getting a penalty. I think they all dive off their feet, knock the ball forward, somehow end up getting a penalty and kick the 3 points. But good to see them get on the board.
Yeah. And I think probably deserve it. They do an awful lot of disrupting Australia in that first half in particular. And playing nothing themselves.
The commentators seem hell-bent on the fact that the USA are like the best team in the world because they're not getting complete, like, because it's not triple figures. He's effectively at one point saying like, oh, the USA are basically the better team in this game.
At one point, at halftime, the commentator says, on the commentator, the presenter says, of course, this game will finish with Australia scoring 60 points. But at the minute, they're being outplayed.
I thought we misheard that.
Right? I pointed out to Nelson the same thing. Like, what? Like, it's definitely much closer than that. I mean, the only thing was you knew USA were never going to score points because every time they had the ball, they knocked it on, within a phase. Like, they could not hold the ball into a tackle to save their life.
They could only get upfield by getting intercepts, which they got a lot of. But then if they had to make a pass, it was definitely going to grab.
It was brilliant because I don't think there was any defense in this game. USA made maybe, four or five tackles, but there was no, cohesive defence over the course of the whole game. And in Australia, actually, the four times the USA put together, as you say, more than maybe two passes in a row, you felt like, oh, they're in here, they could do this. And it just took the odd scramble tackle by Leeds or Campese or Slack or someone.
Yeah. Should we talk about the Nelson try? I know we're skipping ahead a little bit,
we're totally out of order. Who cares?
We did
talk about the Andrew Slack try anyway off the Campese.
I enjoyed the Ray Nelson try because it comes from just really rubbish hands by the USA. Like, the way that they get the ball out wide is dreadful. And then Campo just decides he can't be asked to tackle Ray Nelson whatsoever. And he's just like, I'm above this. I don't need this. I don't need to make this tackle. I'm still going to be man of the match. Who cares? And Nelson just kind of slips past this all-time great on the wing and does the world's weirdest dive.
Superhero. It's a Superman dive. It's definitely not a good-looking dive, but it is definitely, it's got to be called the Superman dive. Hands above his head, falls very awkwardly. I don't think he's going to do it again afterwards.
No.
But it's because he falls to his knees first whilst trying to do the Superman dive. I have written in my notes, just all I have on that try is, shit try, worst dive, what a player.
Did you guys see, it was the Tongan Thor, his first swan dive attempt was very, very similar. Hands on above his head, but basically lands on his feet and then his knee and goes down.
That's a lot of Thor to lift. Like, Dan said, he's a heavy man, though. At least, Nelson's light as a feather. He should be able to get a solid dive on him.
He's a very heavy man. I think he weighs at least 260.
260 Ray Nelson.
Units. 260 units, yeah.
Yeah. And hey, I hope that the Tongan Thor enjoys the Godfather.
watching the Campese defense, I feel like it's watching like the All-Star USA basketball games where they're just like, we won't defend. That's fine. Like, we're just going to score more tries than you. You score, we'll score two. Like, it's fine. I don't need to put my shoulder into a place I could get injured.
That's why we need to bring in the All-Star weekend to rugby. This is why we need this.
It's very true.
We need to bring David Campese back, put him on the wing and tell him you don't have to tackle.
Yeah,
but we are going to show you are going to be shown up by some average Premiership winger who we brought in.
Can we push for that to happen? I was talking about this a few years ago. Imagine on the All-Star weekend, you also had like a 3v3 game and all this sort of stuff. Rather than 15v15, you can have all these different kind of concepts and just like absolute freaks. Like, just you got Damian McKenzie and Molnar and things like that in your 3v3 side, and just dynamic players.
We should do everybody stick against Campo. If he's that good, he should still win.
I would have
15 against Campo.
I really want that 3-on-3 rugby now. I want one person chicken scratches as a scrum in the place of scrums. Yeah. And it gives you that kind of like tactics of, do you put one forward in or do you focus entirely on people who use the space?
When we talk about chestnut checkers, and I mean, there you go. There's some real depth to that.
Yeah. And like, Rugby X obviously didn't quite work as a thing, but the one-on-one instead of penalty shootouts was great idea.
Yeah,
that
was
a great idea.
I love that.
Replacing if it's a draw, you do a series of one-on-ones.
And I love the one time it went to that. It was just straight away like, well, we'll just pick the Fijian lad first. And it's just an infallible strategy.
Yeah, you're definitely going to score.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what he's got in front of him. Fijian lad's going to score.
Keep every team out there for 1 week after the World Cup final, and we have a silly chuck about the All-Star game.
Or at the very least, when everyone's out of the group stage, in the week between the group stage finishing and the quarterfinals happening, all the teams that have just gone out, let them have an All-Star week.
Could you just let every captain gets to pick like two other players from anywhere in the world?
That would be so good.
And they play the team that just won the World Cup.
Yeah.
So we could have like Uruguay against the All-Star team in a couple of years' time.
I think like Owen Farrell would love that when they go out in the group stages to just be able to pick who he wants.
Yeah, it's gonna happen. I like it.
It's gonna have to. It's gonna have to. I'm gonna tell World Rugby right now. I'm just gonna call.
It's scripted, isn't it? It's definitely gonna happen.
Just a second.
Just phoning them up now. Are you ready? Yeah.
You all right, Bill? Yeah. Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. No, yeah, I just wanted to say, yeah. Sorry, he goes on a bit, Bilbo Mama. Yeah. No, Raspberry Ripple's fine. Raspberry Ripple's fine. Thank you, Bill. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, just wanted to say, should we do the All-Star Week? Can we do the All-Star Weekend after the next World Cup? It can be really good, and they can play the winner of the World Cup. All right, brilliant. That's all I wanted to... No, I've got to go, Bill.
Hang on, I'm just gonna
leave him there.
So we're on.
Put
on
him there. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. He says it's
yes. We
Mate,
did
best
it.
Best connections you have. First, you got us on the pod, and then you give him a buzz. How good! Yeah,
between us and Bill, that's two. Wow, big names.
Impressive. You guys are
talk
really
talk about rugby superpowers.
I had to clarify. Wow. It was Bill Bowman I was calling him, not the World Cup itself.
I like it.
What a stupid bit that was. So there's a great point, one of my favorite points in the first half, because obviously we've mentioned scrums being significantly different because they just form them. At one point a scrum forms, then they realize they don't have a ball, so Brian Smith has to jog off the pitch, get a ball, jog back around to the far side and put the ball in, all while they're still scrummaging.
I didn't notice that.
Somehow I missed it. But the scrums, they were just such a weird thing. Like, to me, it looked like two deers saw each other and went, oh, shit, you're there, and then just ram each other because they just noticed that each other's there. Like, there was no forethought.
It's the best.
Yeah.
I think we should go back to that rule. They're all so worried about safety. But the problem is, like, you can't actually get good at scrumming if that's the prep you get. So then the risk goes down straight away. Like, it's such a good way to scrum.
And I don't know if you've seen it in any other games yet, on my first driving, like scrum, where they drive the other team into touch.
Yeah.
They literally turn 90 degrees and drive them off the field.
They wheel it out. Yeah.
Isn't
that amazing? I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
It's awesome. We got to find a way to bring that stuff back. I love it. Set piece to set piece. We're done.
Like scrums being won against the head so much more often. You see teams like actually driving them off the ball and winning it back in the way that I thought only really happened in video games. No, it's happening there.
A lot of this feels like a video game.
You could also say the rolling ball was the same, right? Like how many times in the game is there a tackle and then all of a sudden it's like an 8-on-8 rolling ball? You're like, where the hell did this come from?
Yeah.
At one point, Steve Cutler, the Australia lock, has the ball basically in open space, and he then instead turns his back and runs into someone else to form a maul. Like, he could have made a break. He had a gap in front of him, and he doesn't want it. He just goes, no, we're mauling here.
I love just the sheer amount of that, like, because there's probably about 80% of players are afraid of contact. Then the other 20% will just do nothing but contact.
Yeah.
I reckon Darcy Swain was watching that, like, with a single tear rolling down his face. He never got to live that dream.
Made for it.
I thought the whole turning and just going, somebody's help support me, that was very Ned Hannigan. You make the break and he just goes, shit, what do I do? And he was thinking about the same thing. I'm going to set up a driving mall, and just no one was near him.
I genuinely can't believe it's taken us about 15 episodes of this World Cup before Ted Flanagan comes up in conversation.
But it had to be you.
It had to be you too.
It's destiny, boys. It was destiny.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like Ned Hannigan would look quite good in this World Cup.
He probably would. But, yeah, should I tell everyone that you did privately message me and say, please mention Ted Flanagan?
Yeah. I've been reminding you every day for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, make sure you do it.
My favorite player.
Yeah. He's going to walk straight back into the world. He's put my money on it.
Yeah.
Because he started to look a bit better last year.
He did. He did look a bit better, actually.
Like,
he's still a meme, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's just got a mop on the head, and he's just something's missing from him.
It might be most of a brain.
As Australia are genuinely getting some depth in all the positions we haven't, other than hooker right now. So actually, even that's slowly getting better. But Ted Flanagan will go nowhere near a Wallabies jersey ever again. We, for once, have some genuine depth. That's pretty good.
And the second row is coming through is after being a kind of area where you would find a good player every few years and then they disappear off to go play for London Irish.
Have you seen Nick Frost yet, guys? Have you heard the Nick Frost
story? Yeah.
He's the best. So his dad was the player retention manager in Australia.
As soon as he
finished school, he left Australia and went to the Crusaders Academy. When his dad was the player retention manager,
what?
Went down.
Everybody, you should sign with the Waratahs. We're really, really good here.
Yeah, we'll
except my
you.
Son, you should go somewhere else to actually learn some good
football. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
He's going to Japan, isn't he now?
Yeah, no. Well, no. So he signed for Japan, thinking that hey, I'm not going to make the Wallabies. And then as soon as he did that, apparently he never actually talked to the coaches about the fact that he thought he was thinking about it. So then straight away they called him into the extended Wallabies squad, and now they're trying to get him out of his contract.
Yeah.
I think it's almost a done deal because they're just so interested in him for Wallabies level.
But I mean, break the contract and pay the money.
He's a freak.
But he's young.
He's so good.
He is quick and he's very, very tall. He's an exciting one.
He's great. Like I remember watching him play in the 20s and feeling really excited. There was a player called Nick Frost playing for Wallabies.
I think he scored about a 60-minute try in that too.
I don't think it was that big, but most people was 100 minutes for sure.
I wrote there and then, how's that for a slice of fried Wallaby gold? I've been sitting on that for about 4 years now. I was gutted when he said he was going to Japan because he thought, I'm never going to get to use that.
He's staying, mate.
For sure.
They're throwing the checkbook at him.
Yep.
I mean, that's good. There'll be so many Shaun of the Dead jokes to follow in the next 10 years of his test career.
That's it. The amount of times I looked him up and just kept going, shit, I've got to type in Nick Frost rugby.
Yeah.
I don't want Shaun of the Dead stuff, but Nick Frost rugby.
Yeah. A really ungoogleable name he has.
Yeah, definitely.
I just, you need to bring through a second record, Song Peg now.
Like it has to happen.
We should be even less Googleable.
You at least need a Bill Bailey or something, you know? At least somebody who was in the cast of Hot Fuzz has to partner in the second row.
I like it. I think it'd be sponsored by Hot Fuzz as well. That just goes across the back of the shirt. Yeah.
Sponsored by the Sanford Police Community. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. Now, speaking about Wallabies.
Yes.
I think, personally, the best player on the field.
Oh, just too soon to say best player on the field, is it, boys?
No, go on. Field.
Go for it. We'll formally do man of the match later. But you can, off the record, tell me who you think the best player on the field. Should we just stage this as a natural conversation? So, should we talk about Wallabies?
Yeah, Harry? We should. Yeah, let's talk about Wallabies.
Let's talk about Wallabies.
Yeah.
The game that we're here to talk about. Brett Papworth.
Pappy, as I call him.
Old Pap Daddy. From the about the 30th minute, just decided he was the best player in the park by a country mile. Like, just didn't realise before that point. And oh my God, he was so freaking good. For the next try of the game, he goes off the left, beats the Vinick, the inside centre, then goes again off the left, beats Helu, the outside centre. Then he throws, and the ankle breaker on Helu, the floor. And then he throws the big dummy for Nelson, who just falls for it, and he just goes through himself and scores under the post. It was like...
Both Nelson on the field amazing. And Nelson you're talking to, both were fooled by that dummy. I looked across and he was under the post. Tommy.
Yeah, glorious. It's somewhere around half time. He just goes, am I world class? Am I great?
Oh my God, I'm world class.
And he scores another huge break, the next one, and then burns another defender, steps another player. It just absolutely burns people and then throws the ball to Camper.
He did all three. Step someone. Burns someone on the outside and then draw and passes and throws the pass to the over the last defender to Campo. Like,
it's like he's visited by three ghosts at half time who tell him the true meaning of rugby, and he comes out in the second half as the best player in the world.
Yeah, you will now be able to run, kick, and pass.
Like at points, genuinely, like that try, he's kind of unplayable.
Yeah.
Like, the step, and he's then got the pass, and he's got like he puts in a lovely kick as well at one point that. Forces Nelson to play it, and the Wallabies make like a 40-meter net gain off it. Like, he's got it all.
We were about 5 minutes into the game when I wrote at the top of my sheet that Campo and Liner are both in man of the match contention. And then, like, halfway through the game, also writing Papworth's name there and thinking, like, oh my God, it's going to be him. It's nailed on, even though he did nothing in the first half. Like, I don't know. Nothing. This is, we will obviously come on to this when we do man of the match, but it was really puzzling.
The other thing about him, I don't know if you know a lot of it, what happens in the future with him, but he hurts himself in the semi against France, which is clearly another reason why Wales beat us.
Yeah.
But he retired at the age of 27.
Hold on. He also left for rugby league straight after this.
Okay.
Went to the Roosters. So you know how like in Australia, it's quite a big thing because the NRL is so big that we're always trying to bring over the best players from rugby league. And do you guys know Suliasi Vilavalu? Surely.
Yeah.
He
was the top try scorer for a couple of years in the NRL for the Melbourne Storm. He's just an athletic freak of nature. Mm. 2 years in the competition right now, and he's done his hammy twice. He's just been rested for the third time for a hammy this week. In two seasons, he's played 9 games, and there's this blow up all across social media that he's the worst money we've ever spent.
Yeah.
Well,
when he went to the league, in his entire time period of playing league, there was 88 games. Okay. Can you both have a guess? Just quick off the top of your head, how many games do you reckon he actually played out of 88?
Papworth.
I'll say 11.
I was going to say 14.
Played 7.
Wow.
Out of 88 games, that has got to be the least amount of games played by a professional ever.
Yeah. Like, especially to say he's good. Like,
yeah.
And they probably spent money bringing him over.
Oh, like, yeah.
He's probably
that.
And he retired at the age of 27, shoulder injuries, knee injuries, broke his jaw. So this was a big highlight for him, I think, this match.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
He realised he's good and then left. Yeah.
Yeah.
And never played again.
Hell of a thing to do when you realise you've got talent.
We're going to face something else.
Yeah, leave it all behind. So, yeah, should we just wrap up some of the Australian tries in the second half? There's Cody scores a try where there's just the world's worst tackling.
My God.
The worst.
He literally strolls through. Everyone else was going, we're playing touch footy, right? Like, I touched him. Come back, I touched you. Ridiculous.
I think it has to be in dick of the day contention, though, for the fact he starts taking under the post, then just gets bored and puts it down. Like, doesn't get all the way to the post. Like, no one's covering.
He's kicking well.
He's, you know, yeah, he's doing all right. He's better than last week. Liner, let's give him a bit of a test. Don't want to make it too easy for him.
Speaking of dick of the day, the second last score of this match was Dave Horton coming into his own taking that as cool as you like drop kick 25, 30 metres out when they were down 41-9. And again, like the commentators give him a pat on the back, like, wow, look at that, so composed. Fantastic drop goal. To me, that's dick of the day contention, surely.
Just like, it was great, like, them talking about, like, oh, what brilliant option. What great composure he has. It's like, yeah, great composure. He's 40 points down. Of course he's composed. Like,
he's going, in his head, he's going, if I miss this, we're still going to lose by 3 extra points.
That's it. Like, last time when we did Australia against Russia, and, like, yeah. I have it written down, it's a Konstantin Rashkov moment, taking that 3-pointer.
And random same thing.
Yeah. I found it unbelievable that that's happened again when we have you boys coming on. And, like, there was that rugby league sketch of Australia against Russia that I mentioned back then. And I can't believe it's come back to mind. It's always against Australia.
It's so odd.
We assumed it wasn't coincidence, to be honest. Yeah. We assumed you watch the game, you're like, all right, this is the one we need the boys on.
We were waiting for this moment. But the commentators actually said, Australia has scored 7 tries, but America has contested the whole way around about this time. So they've gone, yeah, they're still in this. They're definitely in this.
It's really unsatisfying when you look at the score sheet as well afterwards and you see try, Nelson, conversion, Nelson, penalty, Nelson, drop goal, Horton.
Yeah.
We could have had Nelson for the Nelson full house.
Yeah, the full Nelson.
Imagine what that would have been paying as well at the bookies.
Yeah. Mm.
It's true. Look, I imagine that professional poker player Gary Lambert would have profited from that.
Maybe he had his fingers in this, his dirty little fingers. And he just said, yeah, look, I've got money on you to do a drop goal. Can you do it? And he goes, yeah, cool as anything.
If he's got dirty money, they should send it for the car wash.
I mean, he should have asked them maybe if he could win instead. That maybe would have helped a little bit more. But I don't know, maybe he was too busy watching Apocalypse Now.
Guys, the last try, if we round it out, of course it was Pap Daddy at it again with his fancy footwork.
Big puppy.
This time, rather than putting the pace on, he did the old stop and go where you just stand still for a while and the defence just parked ways. And then he goes into contact and throws the offload to Leeds, who just flies through for the final try. And it was just like, he's like, how have we not scored yet? Like, what else can I do here? I know, I'll stand still and then still score a try. Like, Pap Daddy, that was me, the clincher. He was the absolute clincher for Pappy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have it written down as Leeds try, Papworth turned into a flash cunt in the last 5 minutes. Come off it.
Campese gets a try as well.
Which he actually grounds this time.
Yeah, yes. Well taken by him. Just like, because so much of this game is him being a bit of a flash dickhead, I then to see him run the boring line and get, you know, run a good support line and get the try, just shows that, hey, when he wanted to, he could do anything.
Yeah. He made, like, it looked so easy for him. Like, he was finding this whole thing, like, not at all challenging. And there was a point in the second half where it basically, and for his try especially, it just felt like sevens. Because he was just pissing about in midfield the whole time. And yeah, was eventually rewarded with his own try.
Who is it that beats the man and gives Campese the ball? No one other.
Papa Brett.
Brett. Goddamn Papworth, the greatest player to have played rugby
for 40
from
minutes.
From this game, he is the best player ever.
The best player in all 7 of his NRL games.
Yeah, exactly. So, does that round us out for the tries, or are we missing any?
I think that's more or less it.
It's all the tries we care about, at least.
Also, though, talking of drop goals, we didn't mention Michael Lyon's attempt at drop goal.
Oh, yes.
I mean, we have got a dick of the day segment to segue our way into if this is the opportunity, because Do you want to describe that, Robbie?
So Australia have a free kick and Smith taps it, gives it to Liner, who thinks about the drop goal, realizes someone's coming up in his face, steps them, then goes, yeah, this is a good time to go for the drop goal still. And, you know, sometimes you say, oh, drop goal attempt doesn't really get off the floor. And you assume it still goes another 20 meters along the ground. This goes about a yard along the ground right in front of it.
The commentator summed it up perfectly. Drop goal, is it? Not a good one. That was what they said. They then answered their own question. It was horrible. It was really, really bad.
Yeah. It genuinely goes, yeah, 1 or 2 meters across the floor and into USA hands.
It wasn't the worst. There were some bad kicks in this match. There was Mike Saunders, the reserve nine. He also, off the back of the scrum, kicked the ball and it went about half a meter. And the commentators went, whoa, that went half a meter. Like,
brutal.
The really Saunders' bad. Impact off the bench is very interesting, actually, because the first thing he does is, yeah, the kick that goes half a metre. And then the second thing he does is a knock on. And the third thing he does is throw an intercept pass.
Can we talk about Mike Saunders? Because
yes.
I am slightly obsessed with this guy. So, yeah, he comes on and it's a scrum immediately. And the moment he's handed the ball, he puts it straight in the scrum. Like, he doesn't take any time, doesn't tap anyone, doesn't take a moment to assess things, doesn't even check out the scrum's form. He just feeds it straight in. Then the moment the ball's at the back, he box kicks it randomly. And he's got this massive vibe of don't think, just scrum off. Don't think, just feet. Don't think, just kick. Don't he's think, just that- pass. Intercepted. At one point, he makes an intercept himself. It's a heroic, don't think, just snipe, makes a little half break, don't think, just offload, and it goes horribly. At one point, he does, don't think, just run into touch. It's great. Like, he looks like he doesn't have a thought the entire game, and I'm a huge fan of that vibe.
If you paused the screen when he came on and zoomed in, he's got his wrist tape and it says don't think on it, just to remind him not to think, because he was thinking so little, but I think the thing he's realistically going to be known for is he is the first player ever for USA to be subbed on in a Rugby World Cup. That's his highlight of his career as far as
very I'm cool. Concerned. It's so I've just looked him up and the website comes up with the heading: Mike Saunders is one of the best rugby players to ever play for America.
Wow,
is he though?
It's slim biggies. It's slim biggies.
Yeah.
Is there another Mike Saunders that played for America?
It must be. He was a remarkable leader, adventurous and skilled. As a scrum half for the USA, he played 12 times for the Eagles, one of the best players ever. To be fair, he had almost twice the career Papworth did in rugby league. So his teammates and peers lauded Saunders repeatedly for his overall ability, defence, passing, attacking flair, but it was, in the end, his inspirational leadership and intelligence that raised him above the rest. Yeah. So there's an assessment of his intelligence, despite
he's
not thinking.
He scored 2 tries for the USA against Romania in 1988, and most importantly, on debut in a warm-up for this World Cup, against Tunisia.
Wow.
I have never heard reference to the Tunisian rugby team before.
Nope. Do you have a score there? Do they say the score? Because that would be amazing.
43-13 to the
Did
USA.
Did Tunisia drop a goal in the second half?
Tunisia scored 2 tries, a conversion and a penalty.
I was hoping that last one was a drop goal.
It was 49-10, and then they took the shot and the commentator said, they're really in this.
Look, one day we'll have to do a bonus episode where we watch that game with you two. USA against Tunisia.
I'm absolutely sure that
any games with them or Korea playing.
I'm sure it's going to be easy to find that tape as well, right? That'll be pretty well publicized.
Hey, if Gary Lambert was playing in it, he will have uploaded it.
Yeah.
Oh, he did. He started the 7.
Oh, hello. We might be in it.
Maybe hit him up on YouTube and go, can you just post this one for us?
I assume you've got it saved on private.
Yeah.
Share it with the world.
Should we do a YouTube collab with Gary Lambert at some point? You reckon?
We should. Yeah. We should get Gary Lambert.
When worlds collide, that'd be massive.
Huge.
Yeah. It's going to make or break the channel, I'd imagine.
I think he'd be very upset and, you know, he'd want to just tell you how much he still wants to go back and beat all the teams that he lost to. So that'll be the main talking point, I reckon.
It's true. It's very true. I think we should do a watch party of Apocalypse Now with Gary Lampert.
Sounds very entertaining.
Yeah.
I can't see why that wouldn't have millions of views.
Yeah, your World Cup final video, Robbie, is up.
My other option, of course, here is that I start my first proper YouTube beef.
Make that happen.
I just decide, like Brian Smith and Eddie Jones, I've just got a massive rivalry with Gary Lambert, former USA forward.
You need to do like go the full Logan Paul and schedule a boxing match.
Yeah, that's where it's got to lead. We can be an undercard for Logan Paul and Sugar Williams.
I would prefer to watch that. I would definitely prefer to watch that fight.
I would love that. I mean, I think it's an ambitious beef. I think, are you calling him out now? Are you starting this beef officially on this podcast?
Sure. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's official. This is, got beef.
That's the headline.
Official. I'm gonna say it is like corned beef, though. It is like vegan friendly beef. Like it is really.
You are a vegetarian.
Like it's not. Yeah. It's not a. It's not like a full fat beef.
Did you say corned beef was vegan friendly? I don't. It's still beef, it's right?
Doesn't
don't ever have a vegan come over and go, don't worry, it's vegan.
It's corn
beef. I have corned beef.
What I meant was Quorn, which is a brand of like non-meat meat stuff.
Oh,
okay.
We didn't have that.
Yeah. And yeah, that was a cultural reference that did not translate.
Sorry, guys.
And I you're completely spot on.
I also thought you meant clearer. Corn beef, not corn beef. So yes.
Clearly it's not a really massive brand anywhere in the world.
So I'm not going to do that, but okay. Gary Lambert, if you are listening, bitch.
Mate, I'm making an image of you, just a photo of you tagging him in it and just you saying bitch. This is
Gary Lambert.
This is an official beef now. This is going to be out there.
Look, he seems like a great guy, a fascinating guy. I'm going to let him finish. But
he likes hunting.
He loves going to the mountains.
Steve Toynsman is the greatest flanker to play in Australia against the USA in 1987. Gary Lambert, what a player. What a man.
What a craftsman. He built his own house, maybe. Who knows?
We should ask him if he's done that.
And if he hasn't, we should go, so have you achieved anything in your life? Like, what are you doing?
He's a professional poker player in international rugby. Internationally in two codes.
It's not bad, but we still want to just take the shit on him.
Sorry, I forget he's my arch rival now.
He is the Brian Smith to your Eddie Jones.
yeah, exactly.
Or I'm the Brian Smith to his Eddie Jones.
Yeah, I suppose you probably don't want to be Eddie Jones. No, I don't know.
I think you want to be Eddie Jones in this case.
I think you'd rather be him than Brian Smith, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Should we formally do Man of the Match and Dick of the Day then?
Yes,
let's do it.
I think we should get Man of the Match out of the way because there's so few people it could be. So, boys, do you want to kick us off?
I was just going to say I had one that I thought was going to be Man of the Match when I started watching, and that was Matt Burke.
Yeah.
He was born in 1973, Matt Burke, the Matt Burke I know and love, which means that he was 14 in this game, and he was playing so well that I thought I better just double check it's the same Matt Burke. Believe it or not, it wasn't. We literally went,
Matt Burke, this is far too early.
He can't be.
Then I said it to Harry, and I'm like, he's 14. It's definitely not him. Harry's like, maybe he was really young.
He was just good. He was that good.
Canonically, we're saying it's the same Matt Burke because, look, it's too confusing having two people with the same name.
Mate, there's another one. You say that, but Tom Lawton. There's two Tom Lawton Wallabies as well. So I don't know what's going on. There's some freaking Sixth Sense weird stuff going on this Wallaby side. But no, he was going to be my early pick, a 14-year-old just tearing apart American rugby, but it wasn't to be.
Like, Matt Burke retired in 2008, and I didn't even question being the same one.
Did you think it was the same guy?
I guess it's an early young Matt Burke.
I did think he must be very young.
Very young.
I didn't put that together.
Wow, he looked good. Like he
did.
He could have snuck into a pub or two as a 14-year-old.
Sure. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Look, I mean, we've already spoken about how inspiration it is that people like Nick Frost can go on and play rugby after starring in lots of big budget films.
So the other Matt Burke, the Matt Burke who played in this game, the less famous Matt Burke who played in the Bachelor Australia.
One you just figured out existed. Yep.
Yeah, that one.
So he went on to become a lifeguard and then became a regular on Bondi Rescue, an Australian TV show.
Did he?
Yeah.
There you go. Oh my
That's incredible.
So he was like a celebrity lifeguard after being a rugby player.
Well, he also left in 1988 to play rugby league, like the rest of the entire backline. That's amazing. I did not know that.
There you go. Interesting stuff. Look, I'll go to my actual man of the match. It's no surprise, so I'm going to say it first. And it was Pap Daddy, Big Pappy, Brett Papworth. He just lit it up in that second half, and it was enough for me to take out the man of the match. He showed a very wide range of skills and just tore up the entirety of USA rugby by himself.
Ruined it as a superpower.
Yeah. Harry, any thoughts?
Honestly, the way I've talked up Pap Daddy, I think it's a one-horse race, but I'm going to throw out the curveball. I might just say Michael Liner, considering he was good for 80 minutes, I'm going to say he's probably my other option.
Kicked very well.
And didn't throw the ball away like some of the others.
Yeah.
Okay.
Had a good, genuine skill set.
So we're going Liner. Did not see that one coming.
I mean, I feel like it's kind of a three-horse race between Liner, Big Pap Daddy as he's now known, and one Mr. David Campese. And I'm struggling here because Campo's a dick. So I kind of don't want to give it to him. But he also was the best player on the pitch, so I feel like I should give it to David Campese. Yeah.
Yeah, and I spent the first half thinking, oh, this is Campese, easy. And then Pap Daddy happens, and oh boy, wait a minute, Pap Daddy is just two words for the same thing.
Yep.
it's catchy, though. It's catchy.
Yeah,
it's Big Pappy. You can call Big Pappy if you want.
Come to Pap and Daddy. Yep, no, so I changed during that game. Brett Papworth is my man of the match and also my favourite player to ever play rugby union and leave to play seven games of NRL. Which I don't think he'll ever be overtaken on. I think that's going to stand.
No, I think that's a good record to hold.
Yep. Yeah.
Very good.
So, Dick of the Day time. Who wants to kick us off?
I'd love to.
Go on then.
I want to nominate the same player for Man of the Match and Dick of the Day.
Oh, hello.
I'm going to go Michael Liner for that drop kick, surely.
Yeah.
It's arguably the worst drop kick I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. I think I agree with you on that. There's also Brian Smith at one point takes a quick tap and drops the ball, which is always in contention. Also, Tyneman dropped the ball on the try line, which, again, is an automatic qualifier.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's probably between Campo and Gary Lambert for me, because, you know, beef. Also, not Campo, Liner. I'll give it to Liner.
Yep. Okay. I'm going to maybe curveball. I'm going to say just the commentators. Like, some of the nonsense that they said, blowing smoke up USA in different moments. They talked about, well, when they play their full-strength squad against England, it's going to be very tight. As in, like, they were missing so much talent in this match that they're going to actually push England, and they definitely didn't.
Look, they've got players like Mike Saunders on the bench. Of course they're going to push England.
Gary Lambert on the bench. Like, the depth that team has.
Huge.
So I think there's quite a lot of contenders for Dick of the Day. I mentioned Cody for not taking the ball into the posts. Obviously, Michael Liner's come up. Dave Horton for both dropping the goal and denying Nelson his full house, which is just absolutely disgusting. David Campese generally. Gary Lambert for being a little bitch.
The coach as well. You can't forget the coach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. George Cook, the coach. Yeah. I mean, he's a prick. Up there. Everyone, there's a pundit at half time that says, and this is a great bit of expert analysis that Tom Shanklin would be proud of, I think people should watch the second half.
Is that just foreshadowing Clive Woodward becoming a pundit?
Yeah. So there's lots of points, options, contenders. But look, I alluded this at the start. My dick of the day is the rugby for getting in the way of the local news, because I really wanted to watch the local news from Brisbane or wherever this day. And about five times during the last 15 minutes of this game, the phrase, "the local news will follow the rugby," is flashed up on screen.
So weird. And
I love the shot of Michael Leiner taking a kick at goal with just the words "local news will be on after the rugby" just beneath him. It's really funny.
It's the opposite of what would normally happen, where like the news is on and they've just got like little headings down the bottom about the rugby result or something. It's the flip of that is the reverse. So weird.
I've looked at what would have been in the news this week in Australia. So there was an election going on at the time, and the day beforehand, the National Party of Australia's campaign collapsed because their party leader was out of the country when the election was called and didn't know it was happening. So their whole campaign collapsed because their leader just wasn't there to do anything.
That's incredible. I love it.
That would have been the main headline at the time. That was the main headline in Australia
that
week.
Good.
So good. Wonder they were making sure people knew about it.
It's important. Make sure you watch, guys. Make sure you watch.
No one knew because of the bloody the rugby, as it's labelled, the rugby ruined the whole thing. And then I couldn't find out that I had to be back in the country because I was the leader of the National Australian Party. 1987.
ABC back then. It was probably on our like.
No, it was 9.
I don't know if it was all the way back then, but yeah, that's woeful.
Yeah.
Our current prime minister had a little holiday, and everyone blows up. Imagine being out of the country when you're meant to be, you know, trying to get elected. That's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, and in the days before, you know, the internet and the ease of communication.
Yeah,
like. Couldn't really organise anything from wherever he was outside Australia.
He's probably in Hawaii having a good time.
Oh, of course he was. John Bellage Peterson was his name. And I am... wow, the 1987 chapter on Wikipedia page is labelled as Downfall 1987.
Wow. Was that about the USA rugby team? Or...
Yeah. It's very long. So something was going on. It was all bad. He had a bad time.
Did he go to the NRL after this?
He went to the NRL and played 7 games.
He had a lot of injuries.
So my dick of the day is the rugby for ruining the news for me. Harry Nelson, thank you for joining us. That was a lot of fun. Where can people find you? Where can people find the podcast, everything else on the sort of social medias?
We try and be as annoyingly consistent with our posting across all social media. So Draft Rugby, probably Twitter is where we're most active. DraftRugby.com as well. We've got our blogs, injury wards for Super Rugby, anything fantasy footy that we're doing as well. And then, Instagram, Nelson does a lot of graphics and posts through there. Also Facebook. So, pretty much anywhere you go, and podcasts and YouTube channels as well. So we generally publish everything through both channels there as well.
Yeah, and absolutely well worth following. For anyone out there, especially anyone with like even a passing interest in Australian and kind of Super Rugby, it's great. You're just consistently very great.
Thank you for coming on again. And obviously, again, I recommend to anybody, as Robbie says, with any interest in Australian rugby, listening to the Draft Rugby podcast because it's very enjoyable. But thank you again for coming on. It's always a delight having the pair of you.
Cheers, boys. We loved it. This is. One, as soon as you mentioned it, we just made sure nothing else was going to get in the way. This is the key part of the calendar for us.
Yeah. Everyone around you just needs to stop getting married. That's it.
I was going to say, we missed a wedding tonight.
it was one of ours. So it's, don't talk about it.
Thanks for having us, guys. It was awesome. Really fun.
No. Whenever we get onto the next World Cup, we're going to have to try and schedule whichever game a tier 2 nation goes for a drop goal 1 miles behind against Australia against your wedding calendar. Like, we're going to have to try and line that up properly.
That's right.
Am I right in thinking you two boys are at the World Cup next year?
That is the plan.
That's the plan currently.
Well, we're going to be there, so...
Look, I mean, are you going to be there the whole time?
That's the idea.
More or less.
I am anyway.
I'm hoping that we can be there for kind of myself anyway, 2 or 3 weeks. I reckon 3 weeks, and that way I can get kind of 4 weekends of games. It'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, if you're at Wales against Australia, we won't be making eye contact with you.
I will.
That's the goal. We'll make sure we're all at that game.
We'll talk three games, but then one of us can avoid each other afterwards.
We have to see if we can all make it to a game that Australia are going to win comfortably.
And someone does a drop goal, maybe?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wales, the Tier 2 nation, go for drop goal, we're 40 points behind.
Yeah, yeah. It's inevitable.
That's it, that's the one.
That's the dream. That's the dream.
Right, cheers, boys.
And cheers, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see everybody later. Bye.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. Please join us next week when the game will probably be England against Japan. But
unless we've already done that.
Unless we've already done that, what's gone out before this.
We don't know what order we're scheduling these in. We might have already done that. We've not recorded it yet. But
we were trying to keep them in order, but then guest availability and everything becomes so it could it'll either be England against Japan or New Zealand against Argentina, unless it's Romania against Scotland. It'll be
it'll be game from 1987.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
That's right.
Yeah, I think most of the games in this World Cup happened in 1987. There's maybe one exception.
So we're heading out, by the way, guys, for the 91 and 99 World Cup editions. That's the ones that we're really interested in, for the record.
Okay, we'll make sure we never do them.
rough.
All right. Well, cheers for joining us. Thank you for listening. And we will see you all very soon. Good night.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.